saving money on everything you need at Menards. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements, and it enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 26 colors of Owens Corning Duration shingles and transform your home today. Shop our selection of roofing products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
I found nirvana! I win!
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Final hour on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's had a great day to this point. What a gorgeous day it is here in Middle Tennessee. Let's do what we always do on Tuesdays at this time at 1 o'clock. Let's head over to West End. Let's bring in Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee. He's on the line with us. Coach, you said today, and thanks for joining us, that you felt like yesterday's practice was a good practice. You felt like, you know, the guys were re-energized after a week off. You know how long the season is. It's a mental and physical grind. It seems like from your words today about yesterday's practice to get this week started in preparation for Kentucky on Saturday, maybe that bye week or off week was probably good timing for you guys.
Yeah, I think the bye week becomes a necessity as you're navigating a long season, and that's for every team. Every team that I've ever been a part of, you need the chance to unplug a little bit. We stayed active last week. We recruited. We developed the team in practice. We did some advanced planning for Kentucky, but we also took some time to recharge. Some of the guys went home. Some of them stayed in town, but got away for a little bit, and that can be a huge boost. And you know, for us in practice, I mean, on the whole, there's a couple of exceptions. I felt like on the whole, we've established a level of work in practice, a level of intensity that I think is going to serve us really well heading into the future as a great foundation, but. You know, yesterday we look at the GPS numbers and they tell a story. And just in terms of the intensity of our practice, the way we moved, our speeds, I'm pleased with how this team has continued to meet the marks as far as the numbers go here late in the season. I think it's again a good sign for us moving forward.
Also, seems like the timing may be right to get some key guys back in the lineup as well, right?
Absolutely. We are excited to get Ken back to practice yesterday for full go. And Rocco appears to be on his way back to playing Saturday. We want to be a little cautious about that just because he needs to make it through the week of practice. But, you know, with Ken, we're going to see how his injury responds and kind of make a decision later in the week on who starts, who we go with. But we're excited to get him back. And I thought he had a nice day yesterday. And he was thrilled to be back out there mixing it up, so that was fun.
I bet. I want to go back on something you said about being out on the recruiting trail last week. What's some of the input that you're getting, your staff is getting, as you navigate through these waters now being the head coach at Vanderbilt? I don't know, we talked to you when you took the job. If this is what you thought the feedback would be, I mean, is it going as planned? Just kind of give us a little insight of when you talk to these young men, these kids out there, and you're getting their feedback and trying to convince them on why they should come play for you and your staff. What kind of feedback are you getting?
Well, I think on the whole, it's been positive. You know, we have a really good product here that I think resonates with a lot of people. I do feel like here in the early goings, there's a special type of person that we are looking for. And that's we want builders here. We want people that are coming in anxious to be a part of something at the ground level. And, that's not to say that, patience is a relative term. I think we're, setting a foundation this year and we'll have a healthy amount of roster turnover heading into year two, and retain some really good young players that'll form a nucleus to this program moving forward. And there's a lot of exciting things about that. But, you know, again, for the guys that we're recruiting into this first class, there has to be a certain mentality that they bring. And that's a level of confidence that they can come in and be the difference, right? We want to see a self-assuredness. We want to see and connect with people that understand the potential here and understand the vision for what we're going to accomplish and aren't deterred by adversity, right? Like, we're not going to be afraid of charging into the fire and again, having a belief in each other. And we've been able to find that. Obviously, it's not just about mindset. There's also measurable traits that are important, and that's where Barton and his staff, work diligently to make sure that we're hitting marks in terms of skill. You know, like, what is the, you know, looking at speed, looking at length, looking at frame, how this group will develop into what we feel like, really competitive, a foundational recruiting class, right? This is the first one that we've had a chance to pursue as a staff. So it's been positive, and obviously that's not to say there aren't going to be hiccups along the way. That's inevitable. But also think it can be healthy. And for us, it's about making sure that that the people that come into this program are focused on building this football team into what we know it can be, that football is incredibly important to them, and that they're anxious to help us, realize the potential of our program. And, with all the excitement of Andy United and new leadership and all the things that we're doing to set this program apart. And so it's been fun and exciting. At times it can be frustrating. At times it can be incredibly energizing. But I think that's a part of anything that's competitive and a great challenge.
Talking to Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head football coach. And Coach, I want to know more about the helicopter. I see these great clips that you guys put out there. I love the staff that you have putting together some of the energy things behind the scenes that you see. And one of them, they see you walking out to the helicopter on the football field, lifting off and going to these high school games. How often had you ridden in a helicopter before, and where did you get that thing?
Well, a couple of thoughts here. The first is, over the bye week, my wife and I we caught up on the show Succession, which has been a favorite of ours. And I got to talk to Barton, because it seems to me there are nicer helicopters out there, the ones I see on the show. I'm not riding in that one.
Okay.
But no, I have before. We used it on occasion at Notre Dame, and that was just a chance to make a day trip at times. You know, for me, we don't want to hide. This isn't a program that's going to sit in the corner and as we build from within, because internally there was so much growth that needed to happen, and there still is. There's still so much that needs to be done within our walls to get this program, churning in the right direction. But that doesn't mean that we're going to sit and be modest and meek in the corner and not fight for, our city and recruiting. And so the ability to get to multiple games on a Friday, the impact of the entrance, and there's a certain level of importance that is made clear when, a prospect sees you flying into the game. Like, they know that it's important to us that we're seen, and they know that we're there. And that's kind of the point, is that, we're going to use it as an effective means to traverse a city that, as we all have experienced, can at times offer some challenging traffic, right? We can get
yes.
multiple games in an evening. I've tried to convince my wife to let me take my kids along with me, and she hasn't quite gotten on board with that yet. It's to me appears to be pretty safe and effective, and we're having fun with it.
So, Clark, you brought up Vandy United, and as a former player recently, I got a chance to go and see Memorial Gym down low in the bowels, and they were showing me all of what's going on under construction right now with locker rooms and stuff. There's a lot of people, they hear about Vandy United, they hear about the commitment, but they sort of want to see where that's going. What's the tangible thing? What would you tell them about football, of how that's going here several months after they made the big announcement?
Well, I can tell you that I'm incredibly excited, and I think in short order there's going to be more to really present to everyone that, you know, will be I think really energizing. And Willie, obviously, I'm a part of that community too, and you know, I get it.
Yeah,
you know, I get this. I mean, hey, listen, there's no one that wants to get everything out there more than me, but I think having it done right and having it done in a manner that isn't incomplete or doesn't give a thorough picture of what's going to be done, I think that's important. And so I think we're nearing that point where there's going to be a comfort in releasing some things that visually that will allow for people to see exactly what this is going to be. And it's going to be, it is going to put Vanderbilt right in the conversation of, in our league, some of the nicest facilities that are out there. And I'm really energized by the way the stadium's going to really take a new form, and the environment's going to be shifted. And, you know, there are challenges with our footprint just because we're landlocked, but what I have seen with my eyes has really, it's been incredible the what they're going to be able to do with the space and how it's going to change the manner that the football occupies this campus. And obviously other sports will benefit, but you know, there's a serious and significant investment in what the facilities we function in day in, day out, that's going to be huge. And so, I know that everyone's out there that, you know, follows our program and follows our university is anxious for the next step. And, I'm hopeful that comes shortly here, and I'm excited for it too, because I think it's really going to energize the Vanderbilt community and the fan base.
We're talking to Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach. And as you face Kentucky this weekend, you know, they've obviously lost three in a row, you know, to Georgia, Mississippi State, and then a big rivalry in Tennessee. Is there a different type of mental preparation going into a game like that when you know you're going to face an opponent that's playing with a little bit of desperation?
Well, you could swing it a number of ways. This is why I think we tend to just focus on us and what we're preparing to do, because when you're on a skid, and we obviously are experiencing that too. You know, there are a lot of there's a lot of resistance that pops up, internal resistance, and you have to beat back the narratives that exist externally, and you have to really shift your focus on taking on a level of preparation that allows you to perform to chase the outcome you want on Saturday. And so for Kentucky, I'm sure they're spending time both beating back those narratives that exist and strengthening internally and trying to prepare themselves to come down here and play their best competitive game yet. Obviously for us, you know, we're beating back those narratives and strengthening internally and trying to prepare our team to launch into the first of our final three games. And so we don't spend a lot of time talking about them, but I think the late season grind is a reality for everyone. And, you know, we have to handle it, you know, particularly with where we are as a program and our margins being so small, we have to handle this better than our remaining opponents and attack these last three games with a fresher mentality and hopefully, you know, being fresher physically too.
What do you see out of their quarterback, Will Levis? I mean, he completes nearly 65% of his passes. I mean, he can run a little bit, but what have you seen out of him?
Just a great fit for what they do offensively. I their offense is impressive. They have a great running back. They have skill at receiver and a quarterback that knows how to, you know, distribute the ball and does it at a, you know, with a high completion rate, like you made mention to. They really, you know, are built around a physical run game where they set up manageable third downs and they convert at a really high rate. And our challenge is going to be to get them off schedule. Our challenge is going to be to try to create up third downs that are where they're against the chains and, you know, gives us a chance maybe to dial into some of the things that have allowed us to be successful this year in the pressures and the multiple coverages that can create problems if we allow them to stay on schedule and they have early down success. The quarterback has proven the ability to convert on third down and to score points. And so they've built a nice offense. They've built a nice program. I admire what Mark's done there, and I'm excited to compete against them and have a chance to play against, one of our league's best teams.
Well, going to be a good one for sure, and wear all black. I know it's a blackout this weekend, so going to be cool to see. Clark, appreciate the time as always.
Yeah, great to be with you guys, and we'll look forward to doing it again next week.
Absolutely. That is Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach, joins us every Tuesday at 1 here on Darren Donick and Chase. We'll come back with Mitch Light of The Athletic, but first, Willie, tell us about QC Kinetics.
All right, glad to do that. If you've got the chronic joint pain that happens as we get older, if you're not having success with steroids or some other kind of drug that you're using, if you're trying to avoid a surgery that's been talked about some, thankfully there's a better way. And now it's available from the medical professionals at QC Kinetics. It's now open in our listening area. I'm talking about new therapies, advanced all-natural regenerative treatments that can not only just give you relief in the short term, but can restore and repair damaged tissue for the long term. I'm talking about lasting relief. That's the goal with QC Kinetics. So if you've got the joint pain during the wear and tear that you have, maybe it's arthritis, maybe it's in your joints like knees and hips and shoulders, don't just think that the old ways of dealing with it are the only ways. Learn more about these new biologic therapy solutions. Free consultation is available to you from QC Kinetics. Here's the phone number, 615-249-4024. That's 615-249-4024. Check it out. It's remarkable. You're looking to get that long-lasting restoration of the tissue. QC Kinetics, 615-249-4024.
Congratulations, Ronnie Ritchie. Ronnie Ritchie was lucky caller 5. Won a pair of tickets to see Wallflowers at Brooklyn Bowl on Saturday, November 20th. So it pays to listen. And thank you, Ronnie, for doing that. Let's bring in Mitch Light from The Athletic. Talk a little college football. Keep this theme rolling this hour as we just spoke with Clark Lee, Vanderbilt's football coach. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Darren. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, it was first rankings came out. We talked about it last week. Second rankings will come out tonight. It's going to be affected. There's going to be some movement. There's going to be some shuffling, which, this is what happens whenever it starts getting real, right? And then feels like things are starting to tighten up with teams, and the next thing you know, they lose a game. Of course, Michigan State going down, I would suspect that'll probably end any chances or hopes of them creeping back in the top four. But what do you think it's going to look like tonight when it comes out?
Yeah, well, Michigan State's interesting. First of all, I don't think they're good enough to play their way back in, but with games still left against Penn State and Ohio State and then a Big Ten championship game, there are quality wins to be had there. So I wouldn't dismiss the Spartans just yet. But again, a team that, I guess it's mildly surprising they lost to Purdue. But if you looked at what they'd done this year, this is a good team that probably overachieved, won some close games that they didn't, that maybe they shouldn't have won them all. We'll probably see little change in the top four with, Michigan State dropping out. I think it'll be Georgia, Alabama, then Oregon and Ohio State. Be interesting to see what happens with Cincinnati, who's sixth last week. Could they possibly be dinged for a less than impressive win over a mediocre to bad Tulsa team and see someone like Michigan or Oklahoma jump them? I don't think that will happen. But I don't think this is going to be a huge shakeup week other than Michigan State falling out.
Yeah. Let's do a deep dive in the SEC. Where is this going with Dan Mullen at Florida? This is becoming awkward every week. So that was a horrific loss. I mean, they got pounded in Columbia, South Carolina by a bad Gamecocks team.
Yeah. I mean, that was, there's different ways you can lose. And I don't know, was it 3-4 years ago? I forgot which year it was. Remember when Florida got beat at home by Missouri, like 45-11 or so? It was But it was a really weird game where Florida outgained Missouri by a lot, just a ton of turnovers, and it was really fluky. I mean, that's not, like, acceptable when you're Florida, but this isn't what happened in South Carolina. They got dominated. I mean, for four quarters, a South Carolina team that had been, quite frankly, you know, run off the field at A&M 2 weeks earlier, did not look like an SEC team, ended up with 185 yards, but what was it, like, through three quarters, where they had, like, 40 yards or something. They get a season high against an FBS team of 459 yards, average 7 yards a play against that defense. They run and pass with a Jason Brown, a third-string quarterback who, here's what they thought about Jason Brown at South Carolina. I mean, they took him as a grad transfer from St. Francis, but they took Zeb Noland off of the coaching staff as a GA and made him the quarterback ahead of Jason Brown, and it was only after Nolan got hurt. Yeah, just a really bad loss for a program that is spiraling right now. Obviously, we talked last week about Dan Mullen's comments. He made some staff changes. You can debate the merit of doing that in season or not. Obviously, their recruiting is not going very well. It's just, you know, they're bottoming out right now. I don't think anything's going to necessarily happen with Dan Mullen in the short term. I think his athletic director is on his side. I would expect him to be back next year, but I say that with less confidence than I ever have. But it's just not something you expect to see out of Florida.
Yeah, it was the 2018 season, and Missouri went there and beat them 38-17 when Florida was ranked.
Yeah, it might have been another game. I'll look, because actually Missouri has had great success against Florida. I think they've beaten them two times down in Gainesville, and had, you know, up until the last couple of years, Missouri had a little winning streak going against them. Seemed to me it was more lopsided game than that, but maybe that was it. But you guys get the point. Like, sometimes you can lose a game and it not be that alarming. Saturday was alarming, basically, because who it came against. Let's be frank, yeah. South Carolina was fortunate to beat Vanderbilt 2 weeks prior.
Yep. Tennessee's been really impressive, and I could not believe, when you look at the stats, how in the world they won that game. The time of possession was 44-16 in Kentucky's favor. Kentucky ran 99 offensive plays. Kentucky converted 12 third downs, and it was 12 of 13 at one point. And Tennessee's on the road, and Tennessee scores 45 points and wins 45-42. That was a heck of a win for Josh Heupel and the Vols.
No doubt. And you know what? There's only one stat that matters, and they had one more point than Kentucky. And I know a lot was made in the advanced stats guys, and, you know, I like stats as much as the next guy, will tell you the time of possession doesn't matter. And I agree. I mean, you want to – it's hard to drive the football up and down the field against a good defense, so you want big plays. But at some point, when the disparity is that great and the plays are that great, it's not good for your team because your defense is on the field so much. Now, it didn't end up coming back to bite them, but I was watching that game and thinking, okay, this is great that Tennessee's scoring like this is scoring quickly, but when Kentucky has the ball late and is driving the field, that Tennessee defense is going to be pretty tired. And in the end, they made the stop they needed to. So I think Heupel, they'll brag about that stat because the big plays, but I think they would probably prefer to have their defense on the field for, you know, not 99 plays. I think in the 70s is okay. But, yeah, that just had the makings of a fun game right off the bat. And, I mean, I'm sure we could look this up. I mean, I can't remember. You know, Alabama last year, LSU, quick strike. But, you know, this Tennessee team is scoring so quickly. Their average time of possession is amazing. It's just, I mean, we haven't seen it really like this. And that's kind of what Heupel promised when he came in.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And look, the Florida series has been very one-sided and lopsided, as we talked about going into that game between Kentucky and Florida. They beat Florida. Now we look at Florida and we're like, okay, not that impressive. They smoke LSU the next week. That was the end of Ed Orgeron. And then there's no shame in losing. You know, everybody gets embarrassed by Georgia. I mean, Georgia just looks like they're just clearly better than everybody else in the country. You were horrible in Starkville against Mississippi State, a zillion turnovers, and then this loss to Tennessee. So, you know, that's not exactly, you know, horrible losses, but what do you think's happened in this three-game stretch where Kentucky was getting so much high praise and the ranking, and then now they've dropped three in a row?
I'd say that's life in the SEC, and we see this with so many non-elite programs. You know, a good program. We see it with Arkansas early in the year. It's like we get just as kind of median fans, we jump on the bandwagon. Arkansas, you know, after the looking so good against Texas and beating A&M and going down to Georgia, hey, if they win this game, are they a legit playoff team? You know, we're talking like that. We're talking Kentucky. If they do this and they go 11-1, it just – and that's what we do. We talk because we got a lot of time to talk because we're only one game a week. But it just shows you, unless you're an Alabama or a Georgia or an LSU some years, you can't count on anything in this league because there's too many good teams, and that's what Kentucky has seen. You know, the Georgia game, a Mississippi State game was not, you know, what we talked about that week. I think Kentucky might have been a slight favorite, but those two programs probably have equal talent. Tennessee is playing better now, and, you know, they've obviously still got talent. So I don't necessarily think it's any – we should start here knocking Kentucky. I just think they were never quite as good as, you know, maybe their ranking or what we thought they would. They're having a really good year, and it's a solid team and a solid program. But for a Kentucky or a Mississippi State or an Arkansas, and maybe even Ole Miss, to really have that special season and go 10-2 or 11-1, they need to, like, get all the breaks. Everything needs to go their way, win all the close games, and that's not happening for Kentucky. It's not happening for Arkansas.
I think I'm really intrigued by it. You brought up Ole Miss, them hosting Texas A&M Saturday night under the lights. I think that one's going to be a fun watch. How do you see that one playing out?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, College game day is going there. It seems a little underwhelming for a game day. I guess just there isn't a ton going on this week. But, yeah, I mean, we talk about it every week, and I talk about the grind of the SEC. Let's specifically talk of the grind of the SEC West. I mean, every game is intriguing for you can talk yourself into every game being really good. And, you know, Arkansas beats Mississippi State last week. You know, Ole Miss, give them credit. I know Lane Kiffin wasn't pleased the way they ended that game, but a lot of people thought Liberty could go in there with Malik Willis and really, you know, test that Ole Miss defense. They took care of business, a really solid 27-14 win there. So, yeah, they've been good at home. I really like everything about what Ole Miss is doing this year because they identified their weakness in the offseason and they're a lot better on defense. So I'd probably pick A&M the way they're playing, but nothing would surprise me in this game.
Talking to Mitch Light of The Athletic, some college football with him. And, you know, I Auburn is one that I continue to kind of look at and you know, go, okay, maybe they're a little bit better. Now, I know they lost pretty handily to Texas A&M, 20-3. They have a tough one against Mississippi State. Maybe Mississippi State's a little bit better than they had initially appeared. But what's kind of your thoughts on Auburn?
Yeah, I was surprised by their offensive ineptitude last week, only scoring 3 points. Now, A&M obviously is very good defensively. That defensive line is underrated and getting a lot better. If you follow recruiting, they're getting some dudes on that defensive line at A&M, the whole roster, really. But after, you know, scoring 31 against Ole Miss, 28 against Arkansas, you know, thought maybe we talked about Bo Nix turning the corner, and, you know, they just didn't get it done last week. And we were talking, hey, you know what, watch out for Auburn. You know, the Penn State loss, they could have won that game. No shame in losing to Georgia. If they beat A&M, you know, we know their success against Alabama at Jordan-Hare. Don't count them out as, you know, winning the SEC West. Well, I just don't think that offense is good enough. You look at the numbers for the entire season. So, you know, Mississippi State's defense has been playing very well. I didn't look at the spread. What's the spread in this one? I should have looked before, but, I mean, I can't imagine.
I just had it pulled up. I think
it's about, what do you think, 3.5, 4, something like that? But, you know, cause especially since
– Yeah, Auburn, five and a half.
Yeah, I don't know. I picked Mississippi State at Arkansas last week. I kind of like this Mississippi State team. I'd probably go Mississippi State to cover there. I think there's going to be pressure on Bo Nix after that offense laid an egg there. But again, I think they played pretty well at home after that Georgia State debacle. But, you know, I keep saying the same thing, guys. It's just like all those teams in the SEC West, it's tough to differentiate them. You know, even with, you know, Alabama not blowing people out, struggling last week with a banged up LSU team. I mean, it's you know, there's lines of demarcation in the SEC East. There's almost none in the SEC West. I mean, Alabama's the best team, clearly. But after that, it's like nothing really surprises you.
So let's go outside the SEC for a little bit. One that intrigues me, Mitch, is Oklahoma going to Waco to take on Baylor. Baylor is coming off a loss. Oklahoma is undefeated to this point.
Who did Baylor lose to?
They lost to TCU, Darren.
Oh, they lost to TCU.
Yeah, you're a silly underdog pick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Right. I forgot about that.
Darren's moving on. He is focused on game, you know.
I forgot about that. Thanks.
Yeah, he's gloating is what he's doing. Yeah. But Oklahoma, what do you think about this one? They're a 5.5-point favorite, but I could see Baylor with a rebound and possibly pulling an upset here.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, Oklahoma is – they are – you know, we ask teams to win games, and they're winning games. But it shows you that it is a not just an art contest; it's also a beauty contest, and that's why they are ranked where they are in the college football playoff, the initial poll, despite being undefeated. Now they've got, you know, Baylor, Iowa State. I think Iowa State's still respected, even though their record's not great, and then Oklahoma State. So they will have an opportunity to put on some style points down the stretch there. And you look at him, you know, we all fell in love with Caleb Williams since he's been inserted, but he was the quarterback when they struggled at Kansas. But other than that, you know, they blew out TCU. They blew out Texas Tech. The offense is, you know, they've scored at least 35 points in each of the last five games there. Baylor, with a lot to play for last week, you know, maybe you can argue the timing wasn't great going to TCU, the game after Gary Patterson, maybe the troops rallied there and, you know, TCU played its best game of the season there. But I have confidence in this Oklahoma team. I think they're kind of just kind of laying low, even though they're undefeated and ready to play really well down the stretch and can play their way into the college football playoff. But let's give Baylor some credit. I mean, we don't talk about them much. Dave Aranda, former LSU defensive coordinator, they were bad last year in his first year, and they've been one of the surprise teams in the country this year.
So Cincinnati goes on the road to take on South Florida. Do they just have to absolutely railroad them to even – get a conversation of getting back in the top four?
I think so. I mean, South Florida is not very good. They have been they beat Temple a couple weeks ago, and their only other win is against Florida A&M. They played well against they're playing better. They played well against Houston last week, but they gave up 54 points. And I mean, I am of the belief that Cincinnati does need to play very, very well. When you play that schedule, I mean, we're evaluating teams from different conferences. And when you play that schedule, you have to look good doing so. I mean, they're no doubt a good team, but you cannot just live on one win. And is it too much? Is it unfair? Maybe it's a little unfair to expect those guys every week with the national spotlight to go out and blow out teams. But Tulsa's not very good. South Florida's not very good. Tulane's not very good. They struggled there. So I do think they need to play very well. And we can say that. I can say that. You can say that. But the committee has clearly made that point, and they've said it. And they're showing it with their rank, the way they rank them. So there's no doubt they need to play well and look good doing so.
Okay, one more coach I want to ask you about. Is Jeff Brohm's stock going way up, in your opinion, with some of the wins that they've pulled off this year? I mean, beating Michigan State, that's pretty big. We obviously saw that they've now beat the number two ranked team in Iowa, and now the number three ranked team in Michigan State.
Yeah, it's interesting. He, you know, his stock couldn't have been higher when he left Western Kentucky to go to Purdue, and then was in year one or two with that huge win over Ohio State. And everyone knows he's a very good offensive coach, but they've been a little underwhelming the last couple of years. And then what happened? Their in-state rival, Indiana, everyone falls in love with Tom Allen. And they had that great year last year. And you're like, what happened to Purdue? You know, Jeff Brohm, everyone used to talk about him. Indiana's doing a lot better in recruiting in-state, in the region. So, and then we're ready to anoint Indiana, and then now Jeff Brohm and Purdue. So, it's just interesting the way we kind of overreact and judge programs. But to specifically answer your question, I think people that know he's a really, really good offensive coach. He's, you know, again, very well respected. He usually has pretty good quarterback play. The thing that I would be, if I were looking at a Jeff Brohm for a major job like a LSU or somewhere like that, recruiting. You know, Purdue's never been a place where you sign great recruiting classes, but his classes have been underwhelming there. So if that's really, really important to you and you're hiring a head coach as a recruiter, that would be the one thing that he hasn't proven he can do. Now, maybe in a better situation, you know, he would do better in a better situation, but is that enough? But there's no doubt his stock has improved and his reputation, you know, always has a good reputation, though.
Good thing Minnesota gave PJ Fleck a 7-year extension. That looked pretty good in the first game. But anyway,
yeah.
I digress.
Yeah.
Mitch, always
appreciate
it.
You lose the Bowling Green and you get in the college football playoff. That was the one ranking last week that looked a little fishy, and then they go out and lose. So, yeah. But they will continue to row the boat.
Yes, for 7 more years, apparently, according to his new contract.
Row, row, row your boat.
Mitch, Thank you as always, and have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, take care, guys.
Mitch Light from The Athletic. You going to do row your boat?
I just a little bit. Just a tease there.
We talked about buyouts.
Merrily.
7 more years. He had a, 31-22 record?
Yeah. I don't get it.
First game with that extension.
Loses. I don't get it.
Loses to Illinois.
The buyout Olympics, that's what they should call it.
All right, we'll come back, put a bow on Tuesday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase. We do that next. Don't forget to play Silly Underdog Picks with us. It's fun. It's a really fun contest. You should play along. You get to pick 3 games. Remember, your team must win outright, and then you get the points attached to that game. That's how you use the spread. It's not against the spread, but you get the spread, those numbers, or those points, whenever your team wins the game outright. Something I've mastered this year, picking the team that's going to win the game outright. All you have to do is go to thegamenashville.com for more details and to play along. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. I have good news for you guys. You get a break. Just think about it. I'm coming off another 2-0 week, but I won't be here Thursday. So
you got to get it in now. That's what you're saying.
So I'm just saying, you guys, you know, that would be nice for you guys.
Yeah, it will be.
I won't have to get to brag about another 2-0 week again. So anyway, back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, our show is presented by Creation CBD. Creation CBD, products curated for life. Tonight, Maddox has got basketball practice. Basketball's started up, and afterwards, we're going to go to a Freddy's that just opened in Smyrna.
Freddy's.
Everybody's been telling us about this. Oh, you got to go to Freddy's.
I have not heard
about
this.
You got to go to Freddy's. It's like a burger and custard joint.
Oh. Yeah. Well, that sounds good.
And I think that's the only one here in Middle Tennessee, I think. It just opened. And so it's close to the gym. And it's like, everybody's like, you got to go to Freddy's. I'm like, what is Freddy's? I don't even know what Freddy's is. Have either one of you had it, Freddy's?
I have not. I've never heard of Freddy's.
Never
heard of it.
You got burgers and custard.
Well, it's a big franchise. I think they're like more prevalent, I think, out west, like Colorado and Arizona. You should have maybe seen one in Arizona.
Yeah, I did see one.
Oh,
yeah.
You did? Yeah, because they're all over Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah. So I saw a Whataburger, too, and those are coming here. So.
Yep, they are. They are.
Can't wait for that.
But yeah.
Well, yeah, give us a report tomorrow.
Yeah, I will. But I think the one that just opened in Smyrna is the only one here in Middle Tennessee. But I'm sure that will change, probably. So speaking of, I said, well, you should have seen it out in Arizona. You were out in Arizona for the end of the NASCAR season for the final cup race. Kyle Larson, congratulations. But there is some news that you can use here in Middle Tennessee.
Yeah,
on that front.
This one came out of left field. I'll be honest with you. This had not been chattered about. But yesterday afternoon, I guess around 5:30, Bob Pockrass of Fox Sports reported, and then it was confirmed by both parties that Speedway Motorsports Incorporated, which owns the Bristol Motor Speedway, Atlanta, Charlotte, that is Bruton and Marcus Smith, they have agreed and will acquire Dover Motorsports, which owns the Dover International Speedway and Nashville Super Speedway. So they're agreeing to pay $3.61 per share in cash, which will come out to about $131.5 million to acquire Dover Motorsports, which will include, again, both tracks, Dover and Nashville. They announced it with SMI President and CEO Marcus Smith and Dover Motorsports President and CEO Dennis McGlynn made that official yesterday. Now, McGlynn is saying that they will, you know, they'll still be involved, but SMI will take ownership. Don't they always say that? Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting. And a few people have asked about this, so I'm going to attempt to give you an answer. I have no idea how this affects the fairgrounds, because SMI is trying to, you know, they have entered into a letter of intent with the mayor and with the city, but an agreement hasn't been reached yet. And there's been a lot of back and forth on that, and they still haven't gotten an agreement for SMI to run the fairgrounds, because if they did, they would put a bunch of money into it, fix it up, and get it ready for NASCAR racing. So I don't know if – I mean, I'm going to assume that these two deals are going to be connected somehow. But I think that it's certainly a very interesting thing because, one, Dover was one of, I think, two independently owned tracks that were left in NASCAR, because NASCAR owns basically half with what used to be International Speedway Corporation. That was the France family, but they've just basically merged it into NASCAR. So NASCAR owns half the tracks, and SMI owns the other half. Pocono is the only, I believe that's right, Pocono is the only independent that's now left. So if they get the deal done with the fairgrounds and that all moves, then they have two tracks in Nashville is basically how you look at it. Now this, I'm gonna speculate.
Okay.
If you want me to speculate, I'm gonna speculate.
Okay.
I don't think the Super Speedway is the one that you have to worry about. I think it's Dover, because they have not had good crowds. I was there. I saw it firsthand. Granted, I was there during COVID, but I know they haven't had great crowds. So now NASCAR has said they're not terminating any track agreements because of the sale.
Are you suggesting, and I'm just asking the question, are you suggesting that you could possibly see in, let's say, the next 5 years, the Dover race goes away and there's two races in Nashville and they own both tracks?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I could see it. Now,
I don't think that's crazy.
I don't think it's crazy. I don't think it was crazy before. Now, I could see them moving another race, keeping Dover, because it's a good market. I mean, it's the Northeast, and it's a historic track. It's a fun track. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just they're not selling a ton of
really?
Tickets.
Delaware's a really good market?
Well, it's closer to other bigger markets, I guess. But it's a fun track.
Well, no, you said it's a good market. I'm like, Dover, Delaware is a good market?
Well, the Northeast, let's put it that way, is okay. A good area that they want to be in.
Or but. Two races in that, or
yeah.
A race in Nashville.
Yeah, but
another
which can be done. I mean, I think, honestly, I don't know why Atlanta got its second race back. Because I thought Kentucky was fine. I would like to see them go back to Kentucky. The way I see it, if I'm running things, there is a very, very small exception of a track that should have more than one race. But I would like to see them, go to Atlanta once, go to Kentucky, go
basically
to
Daytona, Talladega, Bristol.
Darlington. I'm cool with Darlington having two. I'm cool with Martinsville having two.
Two for both of those?
I'd be fine if it was just the Southern, but, the short tracks, because they don't have many short tracks, I'm okay going to twice because they need more short tracks. But
That's what the point of
yeah,
fairgrounds
that's the fairgrounds. That that adds one. There's discussion on – you probably haven't heard this, but there's discussion within NASCAR circles. Marcus Smith has talked to Dale Jr. about it, about reopening North Wilkesboro and fixing it up, which they would have to basically rebuild the whole thing because it's just been sitting there. But the state of North Carolina has given $10 million to that facility, and it's still owned by SMI. So they could potentially do something with North Wilkesboro, which I think, quite frankly, and Dale Jr. is who came up with this idea – dump dirt on it. Instead of putting dirt on Bristol, dump dirt on Wilkesboro, make that the dirt track. But it's an interesting deal that came down yesterday. So I think that the Nashville Super Speedway did a fine job. I know there's things that they want to clean up with the traffic and getting people in and out, after being closed for 10 years. But, I would like to see this be more of a deal to help both facilities and make both facilities profitable and be the first market to have two races at two different tracks in the same market. I think that would be cool. And you would get two different types of race fans. You'd get the hardcore, you know, old school short track race fan going to the fairgrounds, and you would get some of the newer fans, you know, going out to the super speedway. So
I don't know. I mean, I would just assume SMI's run a little bit better. I just have never been really that impressed with the way Dover runs things.
Yeah.
Personally.
I mean, I think that
they didn't seem like they were always on the ball.
Well,
is that a good way of putting
it? Yeah, the first time around. I mean, for sure. But
they didn't always get it. Air quotes, get it.
I think that SMI is all about innovation. And you know, Marcus is all about different ideas.
Yeah.
So
I don't get that vibe about Dover. So this could probably be a really, really, really good thing for this market. Just saying.
It's going to be something.
By the way, a lot of people, I'm getting a lot of messages from people. One, people are suggesting that I get the cheese curds at Freddy's. Also, I'm being told, and there's one in Clarksville. A lot of people weighing
people
in saying, hey, there's one in Clarksville. We obviously
can
be heard
in
Clarksville. A lot of people are saying there's one in Clarksville. Also being told they have great shakes.
Oh, you're going to like that.
Hello.
How you doing?
That'll do it for our show today. I'll give you a report tomorrow how it went. Everybody have a great rest of your Tuesday. Continue to be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. We shall see you then.